You're tuned into the Awakening Zone Radio Network, your news and information source for empowered spiritual awakening.
Hello, this is Karen Elkins, your host, and this is where Science to Sage magazine comes alive. And today we have Bruce Lipton and his partner, Margaret Horton. And I have had the pleasure years ago of knowing Margaret when I used to do self-help workshops with Summit. And when I saw the book, The Honeymoon Effect, I have to tell you, I chuckled a little bit because I know Bruce did all of the science, but I know who did a lot of that honeymoon effect because Margaret, I took a class with Margaret when my first year relationship was in crisis. So with that, I'm going to welcome you. Bruce, just so you know, everybody probably knows who Bruce is, but I'll tell you anyway. He's a pioneer in new biology, is an internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirit, a cell biologist by training. Bruce was on the faculty of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and later performed groundbreaking stem cell research at Stanford University. You know him from his best-selling books, The Biology of Belief, Spontaneous Healing, and now The Honeymoon Effect, The Science of Creating Heaven on Earth. And I have to tell you, I know you've been on a lot of shows at the Awakening Zone, so when I talked to Vicki and said, I've got Bruce Lipton's partner, she goes, oh, you've got Mrs. Bruce. You know what, Margaret, that's kind of like saying, you know what, I'm not the mom, I'm the mother of, you know, or I'm the wife of.
Right, exactly. So anyway. And fortunately, I don't find that offensive because I love Bruce, and so any form of Bruce, Mrs. Bruce.
It's just good with you.
That's right, and I'm very used to it anyway. People come up to me all the time at conferences and seminars where Bruce is speaking and say, oh, you're Bruce Lipton's wife. And I say, yes. Hi, I'm Margaret.
Well, when you and I got reacquainted in the sense that you were coming to Vancouver and I, having done events, I know how hard it is sometimes to get bums in the seats, and that's how you and I found each other again in that sense. And it made me chuckle. And you said, is that you? And I said, yeah, it's me. Is that you? So the fact
exactly.
that you found another brilliant man, it was like, yeah, of course.
Exactly. It was such a joy. How many years ago was that we saw each other the first time,
you know,
again
what?
After years?
It has to be at least, 20?
Yeah.
Margaret,
yeah.
Think about
and then
it
was a few years back that we reunited, and what a joyful reuniting that was and is. Thank you, Karen.
You're so welcome. It was like no time in between, but you were always the boss, and I was sort of the student at that time. So.
All right, here's your chance.
And I do remember your sweetness, holding my hand many times during that relationship workshop. Hang in there, Karen, hang in there.
Oh, thank you.
So, hey, you know what? It lasted for 23 years, thanks to you. So thank you. You got us off to a much better start. But, you know, thinking of that, when you and it says, you know, when you and Bruce were finding, reading the book, Bruce, you sound like you were a little challenged.
it's been an exciting and most rewarding journey for, you know, learning about life for me and my great teacher, Margaret.
She is, isn't she?
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I knew when I saw that honeymoon effect, I knew she was right in there.
Well, you know, I have to say, Karen, that in practice, when Bruce and I came together, I feel Bruce is one of my greatest teachers in the area of love and unconditional love and expressing that and living in that. So that's one of the wonderful things. We both feel that way about each other, being great teachers in our life and love being the greatest of all.
And you know, and I came from this very terrible, dysfunctional start, so coming to this conclusion is why it was so important to bring out this book, which is actually related to the Biology of Belief book, which is a book that is sort of groundbreaking in that it really showed the science of how our thoughts, our emotions, our actions control our genetics and our behavior. And this is very important because this science takes us from an old belief that we're just victims of life. Genes control
right.
all these things, that this is my life. Takes the new science is a complete reversal because it reveals that you are a master because you're the one that controls your thoughts and emotions. So by controlling that you can turn your life around and create what you want. But we have to get out of the belief of victim first.
Well, I think that goes to the notion of what you call, instead of cell biology, self-biologist.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are all own chemistry factory.
Exactly. And you know, without knowledge of how this works, we are blind to the reality, and then we bought into that there are forces outside of us that unfold and control the lives that we have. And then we look every day, we wake up, and we think, well, this is not really where I want to be. I would wish I was here or there. And then we look at that thinking, you know, the universe seems to be, preventing me from getting there. And what the Honeymoon Effect book is so important about, it says, go back to a time you fell head over heels in love with somebody and recognize that perhaps for most people that was the healthiest they've been biologically, being in that love, the glow of love, that they had energy beyond belief. I mean, they could do anything. And life was so beautiful when you fell head over heels in love like that, that you couldn't wait for the next day to have more. And basically, the simple truth is, when you fell head over heels in love, you manifested heaven on earth. You were healthy, energized, and life was beautiful. And what is important that the book tries to reveal is, this was not an accident. This was not a coincidence. This was a creative process that you control. And then, unfortunately for most, that honeymoon seems to disappear, some in a week, some in a month or a year, and then you're back to this regular life again. And it turns out there's a scientific reason for why we lose it. So if there's a science of how we created it and a science of how we lose it, then recognize this, that period called the honeymoon, with that knowledge, could be every day of your life on this planet. You wake up to the most juicy love of the world and to the beauty of it, just like you did when you woke up that first day being in love. It could be every day like that, because that is the new understanding of our biology.
Well, that kind of goes back to where the biology of it, but I'm going to go back to where I met Margaret.
Oh,
because
good.
There's the biology of it, and Margaret, when she worked in the human potential movement, I mean, I did that. I went to Summit for like 7 years, and it was re-understanding the patterning. So, Bruce, there's the chemistry, right, of why,
yes,
what we do. But that goes into the whole part of, I'm going to go back to the part of your book, which is fractal and repeating patterns. And so when I went to and worked with Margaret and other trainers, right, it was always looking at the scripting of what we did to repeat patterns. And Margaret, they put it in your face. So, Margaret, why don't you explain part of, you know, we get the chemistry, but why is it that we keep repeating these patterns, or both of you?
Well, I don't know, you know, the why. I mean, it's indelibly printed. I think Bruce also talks about that in both the biology of belief and the honeymoon effect, as far as
programming,
as far as programming,
yeah,
and how we just download all that information from in the womb onto 7 years of age and older. But that's where we're really in sort of a hypnagogic state, and we just download information that we need to survive in the world. And so what we did at the Summit Organization is we worked, I think, in the area, I'll just call it perceptual psychology. We didn't call it that per se, but we worked with these patterns through people's words and stories. Like you said, we talked about the script, and we went back to a time, we looked at the emotional impact, and so we kept bringing a deeper and present time understanding to those patterns, which gave us a choice. I mean, that was, I was absolutely passionate about that work for 16 years, and it really helped me to be the person I am today, that was ready for, big love, for this next step in living in love. And I'm forever grateful. That was such a precious and privileged time in my life. And I think that's really it. We worked through, so there was a point where I felt like I knew mine and other people's stories frontward and backward, and we could look at those, and as they arose, we'd look at them at another level. And that was very important and very, very effective. And then there's a whole other level, sometimes energetically, that just needs to be addressed energetically, that the words don't quite get to. So So there are other ways of addressing those patterns as well.
Well, that goes back to, Bruce, the whole nature of the fractal nature geometry of the construct of the universe. Because, again, it's repeating patterns.
Absolutely. That's just
that?
It's built into the math, Karen, and that's what's so neat about it, because the structure of nature is fractal, and the character of fractal, which is, you know, from the old days they used to talk about as above, so below, turns out to be that is the fundamental character of a fractal. And since nature is a fractal, then by that understanding, patterns at any level are repetitive, like nesting Russian dolls, where you open up one doll and inside is another doll. It looks almost the same, but you open that one up and inside is a smaller one and almost looks the same. And you repeat this pattern of one inside the other, nesting. This is how nature works. So understanding how a cell works is basically understanding how a human works, for a simple reason. We're made out of cells, so we do what cells do. So if you understand cells, then by understanding that, you get into humans.
You know, it reminds me, when you talk about the little dolls, it's like, you know, self replicates itself. You know, when we have kids and it's like, you know, there's the mom and then we open up and there's another little doll and then there's another little doll. It's like we self-replicate. And when you talk about those first 7 years where we're sort of in a hypnagogic state, it's almost like we're downloaded into a preordained something.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. This is the most exciting part of the understanding is that the mind controls the physical biology and the behavioral expression of what we do on the planet. It's controlled by the mind. And then you have to recognize that there are two parts to the mind. We talk about the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and they work together, but they're not the same thing, and they're not connected directly. And that's very important because the conscious mind can be highly educated, and the subconscious mind still playing original programs from 7 years old. And it becomes important to recognize that conscious mind is us as our personal identity, our spiritual nature, our uniqueness is the character of the conscious mind. The subconscious mind is not a thinking mind per se. The subconscious mind is a record playback habit mind. And this becomes important because when you understand that the fundamental habits of the subconscious mind, how to be a member of a family, how to be a member of society, how to behave in these different circumstances that we encounter, we acquire those programs by observing others. So the fundamental important part is that our fundamental basic behavior of how to respond to life is downloaded into our behavior, subconscious mind, before 7 years of age. And the significance about that is that parents unconsciously are playing these behaviors, and as a result, a child just observes their parents' behaviors, and that becomes the norm. And that's how you deal with life, how your father dealt with an issue, how your mother dealt. That's it. And the biggest problem that people face, and this is, I think, the crux of everything in this world, is that the conscious mind, being creative, has our wishes, desires, our aspirations, and we think that we are controlling our lives with our conscious thoughts. And that becomes where the whole thing goes wrong, because science has revealed that 95% of our life is actually controlled by the subconscious. And why this becomes relevant is, well, the subconscious programs we got from other people. So we download behavior through a family. And it passes from generation to generation because it's downloaded before we're seven. So no matter what you do with your life after you're seven, your fundamental programs are still the same ones your parents had, which are the same ones their parents had going back in history. And things run in families. So last thing about this is, for example, when children are adopted into a family that has cancer, the adopted child will express this cancer with the same propensity as any of the natural siblings, yet the adopted child comes from totally different genetics. The point, the cancer running in family is a behavioral consequence of programs that were passed through the family. And we were blaming it on genes, but it's programming, and the new science of understanding this programming is the science of freedom. Because when you realize you have been programmed, then you have an opportunity to understand, A, you've been programmed, and B, you can rewrite the program with knowledge of it. You can rewrite it. If you have no knowledge of it, and nobody really does, then you are just unconsciously, robotically following a plan that somebody else put in your head.
You know, that kind of, I wish I could ask you three questions all at the same time, but I won't. So the one thing that comes to mind is the idea of what you're talking about, community and role-playing in societies. And I think this goes back to, you know, understanding, you were talking about ants. And in the role of ants, there's slaves, there's all these different compartments. So the question that came to me was, the roles that we play, you know, like in a family, you know, like there's number one, number two, and not all of us take on the same issue. But, you know, and this goes to you, Margaret, you could see when we used to summit, we used to play families and sometimes,
mm-hmm.
right? And you could see
mm-hmm.
the different roles each one of us took. And I'm wondering as if in this story, in these scripts that we do, we don't somehow have all of these roles played out for us where we choose what level of development we need to uncover. So I'm going to ask both of you, those are two, one's a biological question and the other one is a scripted question. You know what I'm saying?
Choose when you're talking about that we choose. Are you, you know, there's many levels of talking about that. I mean, there's even before coming into this physical existence. There's, if you know, whether you know believe in many lifetimes. There's, you know, some people believe that this is it, that we just have this one chance to go for it. And I definitely, absolutely believe, and I feel that I have a lifetime of experience with myself and others, that we do choose that. But that's what being present and becoming aware of our choices. I think that you know, that's where the work on ourselves and presencing, really learning to be present with what is in life and make our choices as much moment to moment as possible, as far as, you know, our character and the qualities we want to develop and who we are in the world. That's where, you know, being in the present time and choice comes into play. And that's also where I found out when we chose to embark upon a grand experiment, because Bruce, being a scientist, he presented it in the form of, all right, let's do an experiment. Let's see if we can live happily ever after. And I loved it, because it was like he presented this our relationship that we were embarking upon as an experiment, which it is, because we're still in it. We don't know if we can live happily ever after until the final breath is taken. I mean, the experiment goes on. But that really, the essence of proposing that is also the essence of proposing, how present can we be
mm-hmm.
in our choices? How aware can we be in the choices we make with each other and with ourselves and who we are? And I was absolutely, one of the things I was really shocked to realize about myself early on was how much work it was for me to be present with our relationship all the time. And that's what we were embarking upon. And there were times when I was shocked at my thoughts, which, because here I was having the experience I wanted. I was with a man who was meeting me intimately and on all levels, emotionally, physically, spiritually, meeting me where I wanted to be met. And here's the thoughts that started coming up. It's like, this is a lot of effort. This is a lot of work. I just want to go home and check out right now. And I was so shocked to realize that I had met somebody who was really my match, as far as, you know, I didn't, previously in relationships, I'd always been working to carry along the relationship and to meet me where I wanted to be met intimately. And here's somebody who was here with me. And so I didn't have my projection to be distracted by, like, oh, it's them that doesn't want to go there. I only had myself. And it was just, you know, and I think this really applies to what you're saying about what we download in our fractal patterns that we repeat over and over again. And there are many ways to come around to examining those and bringing awareness to those and choice and conscious choice. But, boy, one of them is when you really just come face-to-face with yourself over and over and over again, and that it's nobody else keeping me from having the love that I say I want in life. It's me and my expression of it.
Well, I go for it, Bruce.
Go ahead, Karen.
No. I was chuckling because I remember there was a part in the book where it says you sat there when you giggled, when you were almost going to say you were going to ask her to get married, and then you realized you'd kept saying, I'm not going to commit, I'm not going to commit. So there was a constant, you know, back and forth between the final process of, you know, it's a journey. So go ahead. I just thought that was, I chuckled. I love your writing, by the way, because it's so...
Karen,
I almost want to call you Brucey, you know?
Oh, you can call him Brucey. I give you permission to call him Brucey. He is Brucey.
I know.
The exciting part that Margaret was bringing up is the part of being present. And why that's important is very simply this. I said there are two minds, conscious, subconscious. Conscious is you with wishes and desires. Subconscious is program. It turns out science has revealed that we only operate 5% of the time from the conscious mind, and 95% of our life is playing subconsciously, unconsciously. And there's a reason, so that it's not just a number, there's a reason that is this. The conscious mind is a thinking mind. And when it starts thinking, by definition, it lets go of driving the vehicle for a moment. And every time it lets go of driving the vehicle, the subconscious is a default. When you let go of driving, you let go of the wheel driving your vehicle, the subconscious kicks in and immediately does everything by program because it remembers your whole life. It knows how to do things, everything you've repeated or learned. And it's invisible, and that's why when I give a lecture, I give the story, and everyone laughs because they're familiar with it. And I say, go back to a time in your life that you were familiar with somebody, you knew their behavior very, very well, and you happened to know their parent. And at some time, you saw that they both had some of the same behavior. So you volunteer something like, hey, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill, who goes totally ballistic and says, how can you compare me to my dad? And most people recognize this in their own lives in some way and laugh. And I say, well, this is the most profoundly important story because it recognizes this. When Bill is shifting into the subconscious, he plays programs. Yeah, but the fundamental programs he got are from his dad. So he subconscious plays his dad's behavior. But Bill doesn't see it because the reason why it's playing is Bill's thinking, so his mind's there thinking, and this behavior is continuously playing while he's not holding onto the wheel, so to speak. And so why is that important? Because the behavior that you play when your mind is thinking is generally invisible to you. So that's why he says, how can you compare me to my dad, and yet everybody else can see him doing that? And this becomes important because it's not just Bill. Every one of us is operating 95% of our life, if not more, from subconscious programs that are invisible. So you could be shooting yourself in the foot and then wondering why, how come my foot hurts? You know, the universe hurt my foot. And it's like, well, you were shooting yourself in the foot, but you didn't see it. When we wake up to this, this is what the difference is between a honeymoon heaven on earth experience and a regular everyday experience is. Science has recognized that the honeymoon experience is a time in your life when you stay mindful. Mindful meaning stay present, because that means then your conscious mind is continuously controlling every aspect of your life with your wishes and desires. And when two people are simultaneously being present in a state of love, what are they doing? Manifesting desires and wishes in heaven on earth. And then inevitably it gets lost for a simple reason, because at some point, life gets so busy that the conscious mind really stops staying present and goes into thinking. And as soon as that happens, we kick into this invisible behavior, which is not who really what we are. And these behaviors show up in a relationship that, like, where did that come from? Or who are you? And it turns out, well, they were always there, but they were in the subconscious. But when life got busy, the subconscious started to go into the role of 95%. And our conscious mind disappeared into thought. And this is why Margaret's work about staying present is so important, because it means what? Keep your conscious mind in the present moment, because that is the moment of control. And if you're in control with wishes and desires, and by definition, you manifest wishes and desires.
Mm. You know, there's a thought that comes to my mind when there was something you said in the book that I thought was kind of interesting. There was a point where you knew that your heart was more the good mind than the mind. It was, because I know that the mind works like the computer, and your heart still is the one that still magnetizes. So why don't you explain the science and the science behind all of that? Because I thought that was quite profound. I knew my heart was telling me something.
Well, it was very
interesting.
the first time I've ever felt my heart in a heart physical experience was the moment that this awareness came into my head, downloaded, of course, from the universe somewhere, of how the cell worked, which was totally different than our whole story about genes. It revealed how the cell worked, and it also revealed the nature that we actually have a spiritual component, an energy component to who we are. All of this stuff is just like unloading, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, immortality, reincarnation, control, programming. It's like, oh. And in this moment of absolute joy of seeing, it was like looking behind the curtain at the Wizard of Oz and seeing all the controls and going, oh my God, that's how it all works. And what was so interesting about it is in that overjoy at that point, it was my heart that I started to feel that was aching. It was aching in a way, not pain, but it was aching in this joy. The tears started coming down my eyes, and it was like the first time I ever felt that. That's why I referred to it as my heart orgasm, and it lit up when this awareness came in of, oh my God, we're here on a planet where we can come and create heaven on earth, and when we occasionally do it, it's kind of fantastic, but understanding how we do it and how it happened opened up my heart, and all of a sudden I realized that intelligence, more than my head intelligence, which got me the first 40-some years up to that point, that intelligence awoke the moment the awareness hit, and I started to realize, oh my goodness, it's really connecting with the heart and the intelligence through the universe. It's really it's like a connecting cord. The heart connects us with the universe, and if you operate from that, you have a wide database and support from all over as compared if you just operate from your head. That has a very less influence on our lives. If you take your head and your heart and you put them together, which is the foundation of something called heart math, all of a sudden you take your thoughts in your head and power it with the energy of the heart, and all of a sudden the life in front of you opens up to create what you want. So it's operating from both, and I had to acquire that, having never been in my heart until that moment of sheer, like, oh my God, this is how the universe works, and boom, my heart lit up. Ever since then, I realized leading with my heart, asking decisions about my life, not with my head, but with my heart, always gave me a better direction. It's sort of like, you got a choice to do something, and you're done rationalizing in your brain, should we do this or this, and you're thinking of all the little details. Rather than the details, bypass the details, just go in your heart and say, how do you feel? And the answer is your heart will tell you if something is in harmony with you or something is in disharmony with you. Your heart is at the center of good vibes and bad vibes. It's reading the vibes. It's not reading the details. It just says, is this picture in harmony or not? And that's why it's so clear in giving you an answer, because you don't deal with the details. You just say, is it in harmony or not? And if you follow that, which I learned to do, and I had to work on it because it was always my rational mind that was trying to tell me which way to go by thinking it out. When I started to say, no, let my heart do it, my life has been on a steady, wonderful, sunlit path. It's just been great.
Well, kind of reminds me of something you'd also written, and it's a quote from somebody who I don't remember the name, but I know you will. It said, enlightenment for a wave in the ocean is when it realizes that it is the water. We are the ripple. And then you go on to your book and you talk about vortices, and this is where we become, the wave ripples into these little vortices of energy, which is basically our electric light show. So I was thinking that Margaret was your greatest illusion.
Well,
I love it.
Nice job.
Certainly
Bruce.
Lit up my path, I'll tell you that. And it's kind of fun because Margaret and I come from totally different backgrounds, but came to the same awareness, which was the most exciting part, because she coming from the processing, psychological, workshop, programming thing, came to the same conclusion I came through by studying proteins and membranes and molecules, and I got to the same place, and she'd look at me thinking, how'd you get here doing that? and the fact is, yes, we both came to the same conclusion, and that was the wonderful part, but we did it in different ways, and so I really acquired a lot from Margaret, because her work was processing work. Mine was benchtop lab work, and so the processing work is an important part of applying the information learned in the bench and laboratory.
Well, that goes into that your electrical fields were, even though it appeared to be different to you, you were still connecting. I like this from the book, and non-locality. And then Margaret walked by you and got the instant bada-boom, big love, and you were still sitting there looking at the molecules, dude.
I know.
He almost ran.
It's a good thing she hooked you in.
The room several times.
Yeah.
But I brought him back in the room.
You know what, Karen? And it's so interesting because this is a real true story, because Margaret had an intention to look for someone with a very specific vibration. And what was neat is she walked behind me, didn't even see me, just walked behind me. And all of a sudden, she had such a heart jolt that she made an audible gasp, which caused me and the person I was talking with to turn around and look at her, and I saw her for the first time. But the idea was that the hit was a vibrational hit before a physical contact.
Yeah, it was for me, that was a first experience. I mean, I really, in my life, I've heard people tell stories that they met and they knew this was the one, and I'd never had that experience. And it's not that I was cynical about it, but I just didn't believe that that was ever really for me. And I had been, I had set some intentions over the previous year, and one of them was that I was so grateful for my life, and I was I was just so grateful, and that if I were to ever have another relationship, which if I didn't, I felt so happy and so grateful and fine just with my life the way that it was. And if I were to have another relationship, I wanted it to be something beyond anything I'd ever had, not about the script, not about, just about a bigger mission. And I did a lot of work looking at what I could come up with that might feel like and look like and be like, because I realized I was talking about something that I had not consciously experienced. So I did this, and I called it Big Love, and I would just drop it in to my, like, sort of imagine when I was meditating or sitting quietly, I would drop it in, just those words called Big Love, that from the top of my head all the way down, and it was kind of just, I even imagined that pond in my belly, you know, where it would ripple out, and then I would just let go of it and get on with my life. And it was really funny, because a couple of months before I met Bruce, I had this thought, you know, what if Big Love, what if I walked right by this person on the street and I didn't know it was them, so I didn't stop and check it out. And so then at that point, I asked the universe for a very clear sign. If I walked by this person, and that is, I mean, no one's more surprised than I was that I just want people to understand, this was like a conference. This was a prenatal and perinatal psychology and health conference. I'd never been there. Bruce had never been there. We'd never seen each other before. And I was literally walking back to my seat at a break when about 500 people were, you know, milling and taking their seats. And I walked, I didn't even see Bruce's face. He was talking to somebody, and I walked behind him. And I had this heart jolt of energy that literally I went, and I kind of whirled around to see, whoa, what was that? And that was my introduction to Bruce. So it was beyond any, it was beyond any kind of attraction I was used to, like you look at someone and you think they're cute or some lust or, you know. It was way beyond that, and which is why I was so certain, and I was probably a little scary, like I could have been a stalker by the time Bruce met me, because if I was so sure that something, you know, I knew I had had this experience and a clear sign, and now it was up to me to go meet this guy. You know? So I had to actually just kind of calm down and chill out a little bit.
I don't know. It sounded like you, the way you described it in the book, that you made sure you got to the front of the line.
Oh, I did. I had to chill out later after I scared him. No, up to that point, I was really determined to get up to the top of the line to meet him after he finished talking. That's a whole other story, too.
But it really reveals that there's, as the Honeymoon Effect book goes into, there's actually a science of finding people and coming together with a mate and a necessity of that at a biological level. This is so critical and why it's a fundamental drive unconscious. It's even below our level of consciousness to hook up with others, because this is part of a fundamental law of biology which is associated with survival. It's referred to as the biological imperative, that we have drives that must be met to ensure our personal survival as well as the survival of the species. Well, the survival of the species aspect of humanity is that you got to meet somebody else to propagate the species. And so there's a science behind the energy, the vibration, the chemistry of finding a partner. There's an understanding which ultimately comes down to, well, now you're on a quest to find this, but then you have to realize that you have programmed behavior, and your behavior unconsciously could take you away from everything you've ever wanted in your life, because you're really following other people's programming. And this is where the conflicts in our life come from. We have wishes and desires, we have trouble finding them or getting there, and because the subconscious operates below our awareness, when the subconscious is taking us off the track or sabotaging us or disempowering us, we consciously are unaware of it. So then we're left with a funny thing. Here we go forward with a desire to find heaven on earth, and then we come home every evening, tail between our legs, whimpering, going, oh, my God, it was a tough world out there. I couldn't even get to where I wanted to go. And at that point, because our personal involvement is invisible, subconscious 95%, we are only left sitting in the living room, looking out at the window, staring and thinking, the universe isn't helping me. It's not in my fate. It's not in my cards to have this life. And we're always looking at the outside as where the source is. Now the science completely says it was invisible sabotage, but it was invisible from you. And why that becomes important is because knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. Knowledge of self, self-knowledge by definition is self-empowerment. And here we are given a science of, my God, the knowledge is this. We have not been running our lives with our wishes and desires except for that period that when you have fallen in love and that short period of, oh, my God, this is heaven on earth, that is the one time that you are operating without the program. And what is the consequence? Well, as soon as the programming got out of the way, guess what? You got everything you wanted. So it really says, my God, we can go back and change that programming, and that's, of course, the best side of the story, because if you can't change the programming, then you just have to look and say, God, I got here with a bad program. That's my fate. And it's like, no, it isn't. You can rewrite the program, because if you rewrite the program then and make your subconscious programmings match your conscious wishes and desires, and then a consequence of that is simple. If your mind starts thinking and all of a sudden your conscious mind lets go of the steering wheel and the subconscious kicks in, guess what? In this case, it'll be playing your wishes and desires. So even when you're paying attention or not paying attention, you're still experiencing that love that manifests at heaven on earth, and that is what our life is supposed to be about. That is basically what it's supposed to be. We came here to have that heaven on earth experience. And when we've touched it, it was like, oh, my God, that was a joy that sort of kept the flame in there. When it wasn't in our life, we could touch on it. We say, yeah, we touched that. This is why we're being driven to do this, because this is nature's gift. Nature says if you come together with an appropriate partner and manifest an offspring that is our evolution, then you get rewarded. That's what why nature pushes us to find these mates, because nature, just something very simple. When you're doing something right according to nature, it gives you pleasure. And when you do something wrong according to nature, it gives you pain. And the significance about that is if you're doing something wrong, you get pain. Nature's trying to say, don't go there. Go over here where it feels better. And the significance is then that joy, the pleasure, the heaven on earth that you get from meeting up with that partner is a gift from nature saying you're doing something right. And that's when we have lived in there. That's all I ask people to do is go back. Just say, you have experienced it, maybe for only a short time, but recognize again, there's a science behind that, and you could have that every day.
Well, you know, it comes up with the couple thoughts for me, Bruce, is one is the whole notion of a fractal is a feedback loop. So when we look at ourselves, we are a feedback loop, and you can see what you magnetize and what's bonded to you based on what keeps coming in. And if we're supposed to be given free will, then again, if we don't like what we have, if we become conscious, which is what I did when I went to Summit, mm-hmm. become more conscious of, so it was like in plain view, where before you don't even know what's happening or why it's happening. But what I have to say, the beautiful thing that I've learned from doing Summit with Margaret was I could see my pattern. I put myself in a place where it became obvious, mm-hmm. where you could actually begin. And I have to say, but as you guys have said, you know, you're still on the experiment. This is a lifetime journey. Mm-hmm. But again, I like the way you're saying, choose what feels good. Choose what feels good. Doesn't feel good. That's a really good clue. It's bad vibes.
Exactly.
It's fundamental to nature from every organism, from the most primitive to the most advanced. And feeling good is related to energy. When
yeah.
you have energy, you have life. When you have no energy, you run out of life. Well, biology, even in the most primitive organism, says, are you doing something right or wrong? How do you know? And the answer is measure the energy. And as I said, we have this reading system to read the energy, but through our programming and our development, we were always programmed not to go by your feelings, but listen to what the person has to say. And it was like, oh my God, that was the biggest misdirection we ever got in the world, because it was the feelings that respond to the energy before you even have to say the words. And we do experience these feelings occasionally when they reach, like the needle goes all the way to the good or it goes all the way to the bad of energy. It's called good vibes when you've got extra energy and it's coming in. What does it mean? You're in the right place. Bad vibes is the one where you feel drained of energy, vulnerable. It's like something's up and scary. That's bad vibes. And what is that? A loss of energy. So basically, this is why the heart becomes so important, because it's an energy gauge right away. It says, are you in the right place or the wrong place? And it's very hard because, you know, in the last couple thousand years, there's been this underlying religious ethic that, you know, like feeling good biologically might be a sin. And it's like, wow, where the hell did that come from? Because it's actually not true. It's biology's way of saying you're doing something right. Giving a honeymoon experience on the planet is nature's way of saying you are in harmony with the biosphere, you're in harmony with nature, you're in harmony with other humans, and this is the end goal and available to everyone once we understand that we have been programmed not to get there.
Hmm. Well, you know, in the book you talk about... Oh, go ahead, Margaret. Go for it.
No, please, go ahead.
No, you guys, there was something that came. What were some of the habits that you guys cultivated? You call it good, mm-hmm. loving communications. You began to say, okay, I'm going to become conscious. You talked about that, Margaret, in the beginning, because once you started, you still had some, what do you call in the beginning? You had to relearn some of things. You were rebuilding yourselves, right? So why don't you go ahead and explain.
Okay, I'll say a few words about that.
And
you know, one of the things that I think is really important to know is that what we're not talking about, we're not talking about some Pollyanna, like Pollyanna state, like you don't look at anything that comes up because you just go for all the good stuff. What I found out experientially, and I'm sure many people are way ahead of me of finding this out in their life, but I really fully embodied that in order to love fully, I had to be willing for a couple of things. I had to be willing for my heart to be broken, because if I wasn't willing for my heart to be broken, I was always in some sort of protection mode. And so that if I wanted the full experience of wholesome loving, the experience in this lifetime of loving with my whole self and of receiving love with my whole self, that I also had to be willing for that to happen. I had to see that as a worthwhile risk to take. And as a result, also what surprised me terrifically is all of my dark stuff, the dark corners, the dark things that needed to flesh up in order for me to be totally available, all fleshed up. Now, I don't know why that was such a surprise to me, because I worked in that area for 16 years, but it was a total surprise at some of the dark stuff that came up that I was ashamed of, that I was embarrassed about, that I was kind of shocked about my own limitations. And so a couple of things. Willingness to get my heart broken, to just really be there fully, to give and receive. And number two, you know, to be aware that any dark things that were in the way of me being available to love and receive love would have to be fleshed up and looked at. So,
you know what that reminds me of, Margaret? Can I just a thought
absolutely.
Really quick? I remember one of the processes you guys did, and I think it was in the second weekend, is you guys went in a circle, and you basically, with the most beautiful music, you took everybody, you looked everybody in the eye and told them that you love them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was the hardest thing for most of the people in the room. There were people who went in the corner on the floor and cried their eyes out as
mm-hmm.
though it was the first time that they had ever been told that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
I do. I do remember that. And I know that is such an important thing to allow all of those emotions to flesh up and move through us like the wind, you know, and experience them fully. And it is, it's so poignant. And Bruce actually touches on that in the book about that the most important thing, whether, you know, you're in a relationship with yourself or, you know, all the people around you, the most important thing is to love ourselves, because if we don't love ourselves, it's very difficult to be present with somebody else loving us fully. In fact, it's darn near impossible. And that's one of the things I think you're describing that really comes up and teaches and touches us each very, very deeply. That's a very poignant experience. We used to, at the end of one workshop, do something. We did several processes like that. We would call them some sort of be with processes. And one was at the end, putting this music on. It was one of the pieces of music we used to use is Joe Cocker, You Are So Beautiful to Me. And just to fully be there with another human being. And so some of the mindful, you know, there's some of the things that worked for me in our evolving living happily ever after heaven on earth are some of the simplest things. You know what? I mean, there was a lot of getting to know how we could be with each other in the best and most supportive way. And one of the really simple things, what I did was I made a choice to when I went into my critical mind, to learn how to drop back into my heart and back into unconditional, what I called unconditional love. This is the way I described to myself. And one of the ways that I would do that is if I found myself wanting to be right about something, look, we all know that if somebody hurts our feelings, I mean, you know, we want to stay mad and long enough to have the right to let them know how much they hurt us, how wrong they were, how, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I found that I would move into that victim role pretty easily. So I would step out of the room, go into the bathroom, get in my own face in the mirror, look at me into my eyes.
I love it. Yeah.
And say, all right, Margaret, do you want to be right or do you want to be in love? And it was just, I would just put that question to myself. And I would choose over and over again, I want to be in love. And so when I walked out of that room, I dropped into my heart and I let go of the argument. I let go of my right to, you know, to let Bruce know how, you know, bad he was and how much he just hurt my feelings and what an insensitive clown he was. And I would find a way to reconnect because I chose being in love. And reconnection became the most important thing. Over and we could talk about whatever later, but not until we reconnected. And what I learned, I mean, I learned that some of the simplest ways, like just asking Bruce, forget talking, because at that point I'm still volatile, and I, even though I've chosen love, I'm going to go back to the script in my head if I start talking. So I would just ask him if he would just sit on the sofa with me. And I would and I would sit really close. I'd ask him if it's okay if I sat really close so that our arms and legs were next to each other and touching. And I'd just sit there until I could feel more and more me drop into my heart and just connect with him skin to skin, just even, and then when I felt, didn't even ask him to look at me, because at that point, if we're still mad, I didn't want to sit there stewing and giving each other dirty looks, so it's just this connection. And
yep.
I, you know, everybody has to do what works for them. This really worked for us. We could both sit there, and after whatever, a very short time, we would hold hands then. And then as we really just were in that skin-to-skin, essence-to-essence connection, then we could even just sit and look into each other's eyes. And, you know, most of the time, whatever went on to charge me up that I got charged about was not even necessary to go back and revisit and talk out, because it was gone. And if we needed to talk about it, we would. So there's something as simple as that, but it was, and I actually, over time, I trained myself to drop into my heart without even having to go confront myself in the mirror. It became habitual. And that, I mean, much to my delight, it's what we live in now. We hardly ever have one of those knee-jerk reactions where we're just toe-to-toe or face-to-face, you know, in each other's face about, I mean, I can't even remember the last time. And we did have those when, as we were evolving in our happily ever after process.
Creating new habits, that's basically, you know, what was important about that. And before we go, because I know time is getting short, I really wanted to bring up perhaps one of the biggest problems of finding love and being in love. Turns out it's not the other person. It turns out to be us for this reason. When we do workshops with belief change and new biology involved, we test for a belief in people's subconscious minds. So the belief statement is, I love myself. Greater than 80% of audiences, and every time we got together, greater than 80% of the people in the audience would not test positive for I love myself, meaning there's a subconscious belief that that interferes with loving yourself. And the significance about that is very simple. If you can't love yourself, then logically, how can somebody else love you? I mean, think about it. What kind of quality level do they have? If they can love me and I can't love me, who are they in that case, you know? And if we have a program of not loving ourselves, then unconsciously, 95% of the time, we will sabotage loving relationships totally invisibly to be in conformity with the program. That's always the important part. The mind has a program, and it creates a life that conforms to it by using the program to run the controls. And this becomes critical. And the reason why we don't love ourselves is because most of us during development had parents that were very critical of us, very critical. You don't deserve that. Who do you think you are? You're not that smart. You're not that good at this, or you're a sickly child. Making these kind of statements in a very important period of our lives, that's the period of recording information. And so we record who we are based on exactly what our parents said. Our mind was just like a tape recorder. You don't deserve that. You're not that smart. Well, the relevance is make a recording of that, and then 95% of your life default to that recording and invisibly play those. And what is the consequence? It's a life without, you know, with struggling for love. And the reason is this: if you can't love yourself first, no one else can really love you. Because if your own thought is I'm not lovable, then there's the monkey wrench, and that prevents us from going there. And it wasn't our parents' intention to do that, to take away love. Parents were thinking they were acting like coaches. You know, if you give a little critical pin, stick with this critical pin, they're going to perform better, and that's what we want. They're unaware of a child before seven is not operating from consciousness as we know it in brain activity, EEG activity. And the significance of a child is more in that hypnosis state. And so whatever a parent says to a child at that point, the child's not consciously trying to figure out what the parent means. Just child just records it. And that's why 80% or more of people in a workshop can't love themselves, is because they were so criticized as children that their subconscious programming is critical of themselves, which then means how can you be, you know, love yourself when you're being so critical of yourself? We must recognize this if we want to move forward in our lives in any loving relationship. First have to verify, do you love yourself? And it's very hard because our subconscious minds invisibly will sabotage our lives, and then we always look at the outside is where the source of the problem is.
So I think you guys have some, what do you call it? You have a honeymoon checklist?
Yes.
I saw that. So I figure if we have like 5 minutes left, you want to give them a little bit of a honeymoon checklist?
A little bit, Bruce. You can do that, darling.
Well, the first checklist is what is it do you want from your life? That's your conscious mind, creative wishes, desires. If you spell out what you want, then you're creating a roadmap. You're saying, this is exactly what I want, and this is what I don't want. That makes it very clear to the system is, am I going in the right place or the wrong place? Because you put an intention out with a pathway going the right place. Well, I said that's really good, except the conscious mind only works, about 5% of the time. And that means you're still operating from the programs 95% of the time. So then the next level is this. What programs do you have in your subconscious? Because you have programs that obviously support you to a certain degree, and you have programs that sabotage you. And most of these programs you got from the last trimester of pregnancy through the first 7 years, and it becomes very difficult. You consciously say to yourself, well, what are my beliefs? It's like, well, you can't really get that because those beliefs were programmed before you were conscious, so you have no idea what it is. And then you say, well, I have no idea what my subconscious program is. I go, no, 95% of your life comes from the subconscious program. So you want to know what your subconscious program is? Look at your life, and all you have to do is say this. What comes to you easily comes to you because you have programs that support it. What you struggle to find, what you have to work hard at to acquire, where you have to put a lot of effort in to get to some end, the questions are simple. Why are you working so hard? Why so much effort and all that? And the answer is simple. Because unconsciously you have programs that are preventing you from getting there. And your conscious effort is to work harder to overcome that. So you just look at your life. Things that work for you, you got programs to support them, and that's why you got it. Things you are looking for, love, happiness, health, relationships, any of these things that you are struggling to get, it's not because the universe is against you. It's because that's a reflection of subconscious programming that will interfere with getting to your destination. And that becomes important because that's where your key is to change the subconscious programming. And then you really have to be able to communicate, with people. And that means this. One person in a relationship knowing this knowledge does not help the relationship because the person who's unaware of this knowledge has no idea what the hell you're talking about and may look at you as some new age woo-woo person when there's some real science here. So both partners in a relationship have to be aware of this. But when both partners are aware, an interaction turns into a discussion. When neither partner is aware, almost all these interactions can turn into a problem. And when one person is aware, it doesn't help because the other person unaware can't help it either. So a very important part is both people have to be aware that subconscious programming is directing our lives. Subconscious programming came from other people, and this could be throwing the monkey wrench in everything. Once you have that dialogue, then communication is open between two people, and that's when change can occur. Then you have to recognize that it's important to be patient about this because behaviors that we're talking about are habitual behaviors, habits. You have to change habits. And one of the critical things that people have to understand is this. The conscious mind learns in a different way than the subconscious mind. That's why our conscious minds are so smart. They know all the right answers, and they read all the books. They went to all the lectures. You could take a test with your conscious mind, get 100% on, yes, I know everything. And I say, but your life doesn't look that way. And the answer is, yeah, because I can educate the conscious mind, but it does not change programming in the subconscious mind because the subconscious mind learns in two different ways. So you need to change subconscious programming either through like a self-hypnosis process with subliminal tapes or something, or by habit. And habit comes in when two people are communicating, because if I come up with a bad behavior, Margaret stops and says, oh, look what you just did, and we talk about it, that stops the behavior. It doesn't mean it's going to end, but it says next time she hears it, I stop it faster because, we don't have to go through the discussion, I see it. Every time it stops, what am I doing? Creating a habit that prevents that behavior from showing back up. So that's how you make habit. But your conscious mind, just becoming aware, will not change it. And that's always been the biggest problem because people say, well, I know the answers, but my life still isn't working. And I go, your consciousness knows the answer, but your subconscious is still playing the original programming. So patience and habituation, and then finally practice. You got to put this into play. It's great to keep it in your head, but it doesn't mean anything in life until you engage in these things. So there's that different level of, yeah, I know the answers, but my life is this way. And I go, yeah, if you know the answers and you change your life, then your life will become different. And this is the most empowering thing in the world, because it really comes down, we are not victims. We are masters, because we can control the mind.
You're correct. And you know that reminds me of, Bruce?
What's that, dear?
The next person I have on my show is Dr. Joe Dispenza. And he's got, as you know, programs to help override the system.
Absolutely. And there's absolutely.
Yeah,
and Margaret,
we have to do something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
We have to do something.
Yeah, no, that's great, because the more there are a lot of that's wonderful, and he's a great source of that. Also on Bruce's website, brucelipton.com, there's a whole list of resources, and people there's no limit to the ways to do that, with the intention to clear up any disempowering beliefs that we have in our life.
Well, I have to thank both of you, because Bruce, I'm very familiar with his, I've read every book, I've got everything, so I've always done that. And Margaret, I have to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Mm-hmm. Not only have you changed my life, but you have changed my family's life, because most of my brothers, I have three, we did the workshops together, and we now have conversations that we actually help each other. We spot family issues, we chuckle over them, we haven't had an argument since, and with consciousness, we actually can change, and we can help each other. So I think, like you say, your partners, your friends in life, the more we all are aware, the better it is. So, you know, there's just so many tools we do have. So I want to thank you both. Thank you, Bruce, for letting us take up some of your time with Margaret, because I love her.
Well, thank you, Karen.
And I know you do.
Thank you so much. It's really, and I don't mean this in any kind of trite way, truly my privilege to have been in your life and continue being in your life in this way. And through Summit and the work done there, that was one of the most privileged times of my life, to make some of the best friends I've ever made in my life over 16 years, and also to work in such a close and intimately sharing way. And I can't say enough about how grateful I am for what that means to me in my life every single day.
Well, you guys, in essence, are like the perfect marriage, because it is the heart and the mind, and and now it's the fusion, and it is just, it's beautiful. So I just thank you so much.
Thank you, and I want to thank the audience for listening. I hope there was some little pearls in there that could help us all move toward heaven on earth as a way of life.
Yeah, and thank you. With that, we'll end the show, and I'll send you guys the link. So anyway,
great.
And thank you from the Awakening Zone.
Wonderful. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Awakening Zone Radio Network, offering insights and inspiration for our evolving consciousness.